Friends, as we know, it is good for the image of tenors in general, Irish in particular, to be, you know, considered rather stuffy. Not so with my guest this morning, Ronan. Ronan Tylinger, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. I was just mentioning there that the Ronan I know, when you were, you know, spent more time in New York than you do now, that was the fellow who came into our program on, actually on many occasions, and would be in the company of, you know, Neil O'Dowd and my son Paul Flannelly, Malachy McCourt, and you were as bad as any of them, in hindsight. I'm lucky you had the program at all, you know.
Yeah, you've had a lot of interesting Irish people through your door.
Ronan, I know, and we will get to it in a few minutes, about your world coverage on which you're enjoying at the moment, with respect to singing at the funeral, and indeed before, of President George H.W. Bush. But I want to talk to you a little bit about yourself. Among other things, you are a motivational speaker, and let me see, among other things, you have, you have been a professor of singing, University of Kentucky, also Boston College, a speaker, and a motivational speaker, which indeed, is something that you well known for, but it does have to do as an author and, you know, with your book, where you describe growing up in Ireland and indeed going back to your birth, where you and a twin, Edmund, were born with a very rare disease, and you might want to start by telling us about it.
No, I mean, you know, I grew up in a typically Norman Irish family. I was a twin. I was born with a congenital abnormality, which kind of resulted in both my teeth being turned out more than anything. And my twin, he had a congenital abnormality of the heart. It was just one of those things. And like, you know, it's not unusual for tragedy to strike an Irish family. But my parents were amazing. I had a phenomenal sound base in my life. They were both instrumental in basically allowing me live life to the absolute full and getting through all the obstacles that were in front of me and being positive about it, you know. So I was blessed in that respect, Adrian. You know,
yeah.
I think like everything, like building any house, if it's not on a good foundation, you're in trouble.
You know, again, you know, to accept and for many people to, let's say, put up with an affliction and to tolerate it, you excelled. So that home training must have stood to you in the sense that not only did you overcome or try to overcome or deal with the affliction, but actually you did more than that. And you, among others, you were, you know, one of the you were actually the first person to, you know, to go on to study music, and well, not only music, but first of all, to study medicine in Limerick University, the first indeed
No, I tell you, I'll explain that to you. No, you're putting the cart before the horse there. No, I went to Thomond College and I did PE, physical education, and I did then a major in chemistry. And after that, it was the year for the disabled, and they opened it up to two disabled people to gain entry, which as long as you had the proper academic requirements and a minimum level of mobility that met the demands of the college, then you got in. And then after that, I went to England and I was designing prosthetics, and then I came back and did medicine in Trinity. So that's the kind of chronological order of all that, Adrian.
Yes. You're entering and becoming part of, the athletic field in, again, excelling. That was something that was also very noticeable. And, in fact, as you travel as a motivational speaker, you emerged as this star of a Paralympian in a variety of track and field events. That was a big undertaking.
I think it's the makeup of an individual, but that gives you the strength to do the stuff that you want to do. But again, I keep reiterating that it's important that if you don't have the will to do this, but this is inspired by the people who bring you into the world, and it all really goes back to the fact that my parents were amazing. They never saw or put obstacles in my way, and I think my mother was a powerful, directed, focused woman, believed in education. My father was a warm, affectionate man that loved any aspect of achievement that I did, whether it was music, sport, or academia. He just thought it was all fantastic. And I just think, things work out for you. And if you can always look on the brighter side of your life and not dwell on obstacles, you'll move forward. You'll always move forward. And you'll instill that in others who will have trials in their lives. But if they see that with the encouragement of others, they can do what they really want to do and don't see it as an obstacle against them, anything is achievable.
Well, I agree with you, but it's well to point out also that you represented Ireland at the 1984-98 Paralympic Games, winning 4 golds, 2 silvers, and 1 bronze medal. Let's just move on to a decision that many would find to be at least unusual, if not somewhat shocking. You're a medical doctor, and that's a field and an area that doesn't come easy. But where did the motivation come to actually become a singer? And as now, we see a world class singer. Where did that come from?
I mean, again, it all goes back to the start, Adrian. And first, my father was a beautiful singer. Now, my mother would have looked at singing as an avocation, in the sense that she would look at singing for enjoyment and all that goes with that, but would never look at music as a possibility of a career. And whereas my father, on the other hand, would have been an individual who would say, follow your dreams, follow your ambitions to do things. As a person, I suppose, I was never a person that kind of decided one particular thing was where I was going to stop. So I kind of got jumped into singing and enjoyed it. Plus, he was a great singer. We used to sing at home together. And he fostered that desire in me. And when I did make the decision, he was 100% behind me. Mom was a little skeptical of the whole thing. But you know what?
She'd be more concerned about the day job.
Of course. How is he going to make a living?
Uh, yeah. Uh, So now you've made the move, and as a solo artist, you have quite a name for yourself, and never knowing, you know, when to quit, you got together with a couple of the most, you know, world-renowned singers. You have Andrew Kearns and Finbar Wright, and you founded this group, the Irish Tenors. This was, again, a new phenomenon, and it took off, you know, by storm. And despite all the other things you've been doing in your life, you still do the Irish Tenors, the original Irish Tenors. There are about, you know, there are
several dozens of them now.
Yeah.
It's all good. Yeah. It's all good. There's room for everybody.
Absolutely. But you still do a couple of tours each year. Does that... do you find that taxing, and how do you work the rest of your schedule around that?
Well, I mean, what we do normally is we plan a Christmas tour and a March tour. That's what we come together with. That's how we work it, and we then proceed to the tours, and you try and avoid to have any kind of clash with them, with your own, whether I'm speaking or I'm singing or I'm teaching. You try and put semesters into place, and you know in your calendar where that's going to be, so you try and make sure that that is not going to clash. And 90% of the time it all works out, and then there's the odd occasion when something doesn't really fit, but you work it out. Anything is workable. Everything is workable.
Let me ask you, you know, about your friendship and how that developed with now the late President George H.W. Bush. And when did you guys meet?
Yeah, in 2002, I was actually, I had written my book, and Barbara had written to me and asked me would I do a part of a literacy program that she does for children. And I said, absolutely, no problem. And when I got there, President Bush was there, and a wonderful character, larger than life. And he grabbed my hand and he said, no, don't think for one second, Ron, you're getting out of here without singing for me. Sorry. Then it developed from there, and we began to have a great friendship. I did numerous things for the family and for him, and then for George, number 43. We became also very good friends, and the family were amazing. And as time went on, I did several different events, celebrated milestones for the family with the 60th anniversary of George Senior and his marriage to Barbara. We did that in the White House. Mm. We, you know, these were some things we did. We did several Patrick's days with them. We did I did concerts with them privately and celebrated his 90th birthday over Kenny Bumpfort and sat beside him. And he was always after me to try and get this green card, and he wanted it to happen. And so I gave him the green card when I was up at his 90th birthday, and he was absolutely thrilled. So, you know, the relationship with the family and letters of communication has always been very, very powerful. And I have wonderful fond memories of him. I loved him dearly. And he one day did a documentary, which I was involved in, and he referred to me as his son from Ireland. So it became very personal and you know, taking politics aside, Adrian, this is a great family. This is a great family. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful. They're wonderful people. They're generous to a fault. They're loyal to a fault. Mm-hmm. And in difficult times, they can be staunch for you.
Okay, just bring us into, and this would be, in many cases, you know, just a casual visit, which you did on many occasions. Bring us into the living room of, you know, George, President George H.W. Bush, and First Lady Barbara.
Well, you know, they have they live in Houston, but in the summers they would always move to Maine, to Kennebunkport. I mean, the house in Kennebunkport is very much a house that you would expect to see in Massachusetts and in that area. Beautiful house, a stylish with classic furniture, lovely, you know, lovely, straightforward decor, and nothing fancy. Just a lovely setup, lovely kitchen. You know, the, where I used to, after shows in Kennebunkport, he used to have what they call a taco Sunday. I'd go for tacos to the house. They're just a very normal family. Did normal things. Yeah. The house was very normal. It wasn't overindulged by any manner of means with furniture or anything like that. And the house in Houston was. That was, you know, gated community, understandably, because he's the President of the United States. And, you know, but nothing outrageously flamboyant or big or monstrous, not at all. A very nice house, just a very nice house. I mean, that would be about the size of it. I mean, I remember going to Houston. He rang me up one time. He said, I want to see you. So I went down to Houston about 6 years ago. And when I came to the door, Barbara came down and she said, son, do you know why you're here? And I said, I have no idea, ma'am. And she said, well, Ronan, he wants you to sing at his funeral. And I said, I was taken back and I just said, well, that's not going to be today. She said, no, she said, but, you know, we have to prepare, she said, for all these events way ahead. And so when he came down the stairs and I was sitting down in the sitting room, he said, I suppose she told you. And I said, sir, she did. But I said, that's not going to happen today. And he said to me, Ronan, but he said, I want you to do this for me. And I said, sorry, I would do anything for you. I said, that's not a problem.
Your relationship, you know, when you did show up, you know, just underline one point there, that you had the First Lady, Barbara Bush, coming to the door herself, inviting you in, and... you know, assuming that you, being Irish, would never turn down the cup of tea, it's just such an intimate picture, you know, in our minds. It's interesting because whatever, again, putting politics aside, whatever, as we saw the funeral, the state funeral this week and all of the pomp ceremony, what everybody agreed on is that this was, you know, a gentleman, and contrary to what we're seeing today with all the bickering and fighting and all of that, which has indeed not just crept into American politics, but seems to be the order of the day. He was, a man who basically was very down to earth, which we didn't assume would apply particularly to a Republican president going back to his era.
Look, as I said, it had nothing to do with politics, Adrian.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. It had to do with friendship and... a bond that has been there for over 18 years. And, you know, they were a great family, great to me. I love them. And I think that's about it, you know. That is the extent of it. And I'm not a political person, so I kind of remove myself from all that. You can look at everything from outside and just, kind of, hopefully it'll all unite. America is a great country with great people in it, and people will come and go, but that country will always be there, and it has all that. Anyway, I'm not going to be rude, Adrian. I have got to go because I've got to pack and go for a flight.
Well, sorry to bother you. Let me just rush though to bring you to the National Cathedral. As a matter of fact, let's skip that one. I can cover that myself. However, when you got that call to come to now a dying president and at his bedside, when you got there, who was there? And obviously, it must have been you must have been chuffed to say, you know, to be asked to actually sing songs like Silent Night and whatever.
Well, Adrian, look, the word chuffed doesn't come into that. You know, the humble comes into that. Uh-huh. Honor, being privileged to be asked by, you know, one of his top people saying, look at Ronan, the president would like to see you. And that's the emotion there. And I guess it was, you know, when I saw him, I thought he looked a bit better. But he duly told me when I said to him, sorry, you look good. And he said, well, Ron, you need to clean your glasses. That's the type of man he was.
Yeah.
He was quick with it. You know, all I'll say to you, and I have to go, Adrian, but it was a real privilege to be his friend, for him to stand by me in every way, and always to know that the affection has and the bond lasted throughout the period of time of nearly 18 years. I'm humbled. I'm absolutely humbled.
Okay. Ron, all right. Go ahead. Go take your flight there. And, I don't want to be responsible for your missing it. Ronan Tynan, as the president was dying, he requested a song or two from Ronan. And in this song, Silent Night, it has been well noted that actually the late President George H.W. Bush, not strong enough to sing along, but he mouthed the words of the song we're listening to now from Ronan Tynan, Silent Night.
Oh,
item of note when Roland Tynan would entertain, have a concert in Maine, more than once in the audience you would you'd have the late president George H.W. and Barbara First Lady Bush. An amazing, indeed, experience. And it kind of it fits into the perception of the week. God forbid that we would bring up his political life, his role, but then you could say that pretty much about any president. But indeed, again, a great honor and a humbling experience indeed for Ronan Tynan.
Losing our loved ones.